Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Leyline Junction. I know that if you are listening to us as we are releasing these podcasts, it's been a while. We did seem to disappear, I think, for a bit. It's been a rough couple of months for us here, but we are back. Please do not give up on us. Do not lose faith in us. We are here, for this journey with you, and hopefully, we will get back in a groove and start releasing episodes on a more regular basis. One little format change that we're going to make here, starting today and going forward. I know for the most part, we try and be very conscious about giving you the names of authors or illustrators of a lot of the decks that we discuss. We are going to focus a little less on that during the interviews as it does kind of take us out of our rhythm. But I promise we will cover that information in the end credits. So if we do mention a deck and you are not already familiar with the person who is responsible for that deck, stick around. We will cover all those in our end credits. We do have a good episode for you today as we cover the eights of our minor arcana in the tarot deck. So let's get right into that. Once again, my name is Jeff. I will be your host. And with me today, as always, will be Joanne and Teresa. Once again, welcome to the Leyline Junction. Okay. Well, Joanne, Teresa, welcome once again to the podcast.
Thank
Thank you.
you.
All right. So today, we're going to be talking about the eights. Now, as frustrated as I was in our last episode about the sevens, because of all the wildly different interpretations on some of these, I did not find that for the eights. Pretty much everybody I was looking at said the exact same thing. So let's see if we can get some depth here and tease that out of these cards. What do you say?
Yes,
Sounds
tease.
good.
Again, let's start with the wands. Looking at the Eight of Wands, we do not have a character depicted in this card. I believe that with the exception of the aces and the three of swords, these are the only cards in the minor arcana that do not depict a character. Anyhow, we see eight staves, eight wands situated diagonally across the card, and this is interpreted as those wands are flying through the air. That's how I've seen most people think of this. And the traditional interpretations that I've seen of this card suggest that this is a card of motion. This is a card of action. Things are moving quickly, or things need to be moving quickly. So, whatever situation it is we find ourselves in, now's the time to move on it. If things have been slow, let's change that. And that's basically the extent of most of the interpretations that I've seen. So, Teresa, Joanne, what's been your experience with this card?
I will say, whenever this card has come up, it's never been around anything negative. So, like, if I'm doing a three, three set, or just a simple card, it's always shown up in readings that I've done as something positive. Usually around like promotion or travel is when this, when I've done readings, this card has come up, you know, but mostly it's been around promotion when I've seen it.
So more of a financial situation or professional situation.
Yeah. Something along that route. Yeah.
That would be pretty much the same for me too. For the deck that I used the most, the Arthurian Legend deck, there aren't really any wands or staffs on this. Actually, it would be spears, but it does show a white buck traveling through the forest, like walking through a stream. So to me, that does kind of embody moving forward. It appears to be a nice card, like a calm or positive card. There's no danger evident in the card, so it always felt like a very positive, like advancement forward, moving along your path kind of card to me.
Are there any other cards you'd like to share? Maybe some that give a different, slightly different perspective?
Yeah, so the deck I use, the Renaissance deck by Pietro Aligo. So the card, you have a, so it's dark. It's a, it, you know it's nighttime. And in the back, the staffs are actually a gate, except seven of them are a gate, except for the man holding the eighth one. And the man has a cloak on, this red cloak. And you can see he's kind of sneaking out. He's leaving. And it's still that travel feel for me, but it's such a contradiction to, you know, Teresa's, you know, deck and you know, the Pamela Smith art. It's all, and it's very interesting to me how different it is, but it still feels like that travel, that escape. So it could show up, but for me it's always shown up as something different.
So I will say, the maybe the one disappointment that I did have with the eights is just as a one-time comic book reader, I know there are ways to depict motion through art. And I didn't see that in the Pamela Smith art. I just saw staves laying across the canvas. You know that I like the Shadowscapes deck by Stephanie Puy-Munlaw. And I'd like to tell you what I see in the Eight of Wands. Here there is a character depicted, and what she's doing is she's blowing dandelion seeds into the wind. And I did feel like I saw movement there, action there. I really like that card.
That's beautiful. I like it. That is beautiful. That is really pretty.
Yeah. I would have to agree with you, Jeff, that I was also somewhat disappointed by that depiction of Eight of Wands. It doesn't, the artwork itself does not tell me anything about this card. You have to know, and you have to kind of keep it in your head what that is. And I honestly would end up going to the book often when this one came up, just because I could not remember what it was for. And I would also say that it's one of my least favorite cards, which is saying something, in the Light Seer's Tarot, because it also is only, it only depicts eight wands. It looks kind of like they're candles. It looks like there's fire at the tips of them. So I guess at least that gives at least a bit more story to it, I suppose. But they're all, they make me think of a birthday, honestly, because they're all, it's like you're, yeah, it looks like you're looking up at them, and it looks like birthday candles, or like they look like candles. So I do actually appreciate the artwork on the Buffy deck. It looks like a training montage, and they're all, the other thing that I really like about them is that they are all kind of going in a certain direction. Like it's slanted. It looks like they're going in a flow similar to the wand's direction on the Waitsmith deck. So I like it. And I think it also displays the meaning more accurately than eight sticks slanted on a card. in my opinion.
I will say, looking at the Tina Gong deck, she also depicts the eight wands flying across the card, but at least she has them depicted against a background of the sky, so you can see that they're clearly like in the air.
It gives the illusion that they're supposed to be moving.
Okay. Actually, I want to kind of back up for a moment. Joanne, you mentioned, you said if you were doing a three-card spread. Now, I've kind of been thinking we're halfway through the minor arcana. Do we think we should start to talk about spreads?
I think it's a good idea. And there's a lot of spreads out there. There, you can do your one card quick read. You can do your, I prefer a three card. Because for me, three cards helps me clarify one card. So it and plus three is my lucky number. So I always like the 3-1.
Let's assume we're working with half of a deck and we're just practicing, right? And not necessarily doing a reading for anyone, just pulling cards for ourselves. So what would you do? What would you recommend to our listeners as a three-card spread? Something easy, something we can use to kind of get the feel, something we can test ourselves with?
Well, I mean, with a three-card spread, one thing I like about it is the cards play off of each other. So for me, if you're beginning, spend the time not just looking at the cards as they correlate separately, but how do they correlate with each other? For example, I kind of wanted to save this for when we got to the Pentacles, because the Eight of Pentacles actually showed up in my reading today. And looking at the cards next to each other, how they correlated, it was a very positive reading today. Very positive, gave me, some clarification I've been looking for in myself.
And so I've seen some people suggest that in like a three-card spread, you're looking at kind of a timeline. Like the first card represents the past, the middle card represents the present, and the last card represents the future. I've seen several other kind of themes for a three-card spread. Is there necessarily always like a defined position?
No, there is not. And I know typically, yes, you do, when you, there are those three, past, present, future, but because it's not as easy as here's what you were doing, here's what you were doing, here's what you're doing now, here's what you're doing in the future. It's not linear like that. To me, past, present, and future, I don't think it's a clear enough, a three card is clear enough for that type of questioning. I think past, present, and future, looking at a timeline, I don't think it's quick as quick as three cards. For me, if you're going to look at time or look at the past or something, that's absolutely at least a 7-card, 9-card spread, because you need to have that clarification of what exactly you're trying to tell the, either yourself or somebody else.
I think it depends on what you're trying to do. I think a 3-card spread is good for a quick answer, or it's good for quick answers for questions after the initial spread. I've seen, and this is someone that I've recently discovered and I've been sharing with Joanne every so often when I see him pop up in my Instagram feed, Madam Adam, he reads it. What the first card is, what is the energy? Why is it the energy is the second card? And then the third card is, how do we nurture this energy, or how do we move through this obstacle if it's not a positive energy, if the initial card is not a positive energy? Which recently I saw the first card was the devil, and he was like, even Madam Adam was like, ugh. it was kind of funny to see his reaction to that. But also to speak about tarot, it's such a wide range of information, of practice. I think Madam Adam probably addresses what you want more out of the deck, where he is so practiced with the cards that he already has definitions for them as soon as he pulls them over. He uses just the regular Waitsmith deck. He's very quick with it, and he thinks that there's not that much room for interpretation. I'm more of a freestyler when it comes to spreads. With my first deck, I tried to do the Celtic Cross. It's probably the staple. It's the one that everyone, I think, typically starts with, because it's usually the first one in any book that you pick up, I think. Even in the guidebooks of most tarot decks, I feel that the Celtic Cross is one of the first, if not the first, spread that they outline for you. But I just never felt comfortable with it. It didn't resonate with me. And one day I was just shuffling my cards, playing with them, washing them. I think we talked about washing, right? Where you kind of toss them around and then put them back together again. And then my hands just led me to kind of a circle spread and then two in the middle. And I don't know where that comes from. I've not seen it depicted in an example spread in any book that I've picked up. It's just for me. It's how I did it.
Okay, thank you. We are going to do probably a couple episodes on spreads, maybe after we get through the deck, and we'll talk about popular spreads, we'll talk about alternative spreads, and I definitely want to talk about designing your own spread. Since you mention the difference between people who feel the cards have a meaning and people who feel that it's based on interpretation, I do want to bring up one other image that I've been struggling with. The thing that I keep coming back to in terms of that question is, if I'm getting advice or, you know, direction from the universe, I keep thinking it's not my interpretation that's so important. It's how the universe is interpreting these cards and the message they're trying to send, right? So, like, I keep picturing, you know, I pull out a card and I say blue, and some spirit of the universe is like, I keep sending him red. I don't know what to do. So I just... The way I reconciled this is, I figure if the universe can communicate through cards, then the universe can also anticipate how I'm going to interpret them. Anyway.
I would agree with that. And also sometimes you're not supposed to know. Like, sometimes you do have to fly without a net or jump without a net.
And I would like to move on to the cups.
What? So we're still on the first card?
We're still on the first card. So the Smith art of the Eight of Cups depicts a figure walking away from what can be described as an incomplete arrangement of cups. Most examples I have seen depict five cups on what would be maybe the bottom of a pyramid arrangement, and then three cups on the second row, which would obviously lead us to understand that there's one cup missing from that row. Then we have this figure walking away from the cups, and there are a couple other details in this card that I might want to talk about. But first, let's say the card as a whole suggests, or traditional thinking suggests, that something in your life here is not complete. There is a missing piece to what you're doing, and it's time to walk away and find that missing piece or move on to something else. I've seen both kind of interpretations there. So it's a card that encourages us to evaluate what's not working and possibly leave what we find really good in search of a more complete situation. And once again, let me turn this over to you, Joanne and Teresa. What has been your experience with this card?
I always kind of saw it as the breakup card, but also it could be walking away from a job. It could, I mean, I think me as a young woman was always on the more romantic side of things, but it doesn't always necessarily mean, like, cups doesn't necessarily mean romantic relationship. It could be a job. It could be something that's not fulfilling you completely. It could be a toxic situation that from the outside looks good, be that a romantic relationship, a family relationship, a friendship, or a job, but someplace that doesn't fit for you anymore, or it did in the beginning, but it has run its course and you can't finish in this space, if that makes sense. What I will say is that, again, my favorite deck, the Arthurian Legend one, kind of had a confusing picture to it. It shows a knight in what looks like a chapel. Oh, actually, it says Chapel Perilous at the bottom of the card. So it shows a knight on horseback in a chapel, and it looks like the horse is rearing back, and it shows a candle on the altar and a what looks like a dragon claw coming through the window. It's very concerning. It's a very traumatic card. It doesn't match. It doesn't really match the description, the basic description. But I will tell you that the description in the booklet of the Arthurian Legend, it still does say abandoning a path, a change of plans, taking the initiative to redirect one's life, heeding warnings, learning things were not as they seem. So, I mean, a dragon claw coming through a window is maybe, you know, of a chapel. Maybe that's not what I was expecting when I went into it. So, yeah, I guess I need to change courses. Seems like a dramatic situation to display that. But I think that the Lightseer's Tarot has a much more poignant picture or artwork on the card, and it shows a young woman walking away from a pond. There's one bowl, which I think is what stands for the cups. They're more like bowls. It says but it does say cups, but there's one that's floating on the surface, and then there's one that's partly in the water, like it's sinking into the water, and then you can see some other like circles in the water, like ripples where other bowls have probably sunk under the surface already. And she's walking away from it, and she looks, the posture of her looks very sad, but I resonate with this. Like it feels to me like someone who's walking away from something that they're sad to walk away from, but they're choosing their own path. And that really speaks to me.
And I think it is fair to bring up again that the cups tend to be our suit of relationships. I know I didn't mention that with the wands being inspiration. I'm trying to get away from that. I'm trying to be more flexible here. So, but I do like what you were saying about, like, maybe if we are talking about tiers of a pyramid, that first tier went down really nice and we thought we were doing well, but that second tier just wasn't everything we wanted it to be. I noticed that the cups are on one side of a river and the figure walking away is on the opposite side. Do you assign any significance to the fact that this character is separated from these cups by a river?
I think that shows a more of a resolve that you're past the decision piece of it, that you've made the decision by crossing the river. That's another barrier between you and the past. So you are on your way and you're on your path. And I, just based on the artwork itself, to me, that feels like your decision making part of the process is over. You are on the other side of making a decision.
When I got divorced in 2021. And after my ex moved out, and I'm like, is this even the right decision? Is this why? Is it the right decision? And actually, the Eight of Cups did come up in that reading, and the cards around it, it was such a huge, absolutely. Absolutely. You went through this marriage for a reason for 20 some years, and going through this divorce, you absolutely had to do it for a reason. And this is absolutely the right decision. And it kind of helped validate. Even, yes, I know people will say these are just cards, but it helped validate how I was feeling at that time. So yeah, that's my personal experience with the Eight of Cups. Is it was such a resounding yes, you absolutely should be doing this. This is better for everybody. And I needed that little, at the time, that little boost, that little, yeah, you're doing good, a little validation. Great card.
Any other decks that you have that you want to highlight?
My Renaissance deck. So so you have the daytime, but you have a pyramid. So you have four cards on the bottom, or four cups on the bottom, three on top, then three on top of that, and then the one. So equals eight. But every other cup is tarnished. So you have five brilliantly gold, beautiful chalices, and then three tarnished one. And then you have a man who's inspecting them and looking at them very closely. He's not finding that perfect cup. It is kind of what it reminds me of.
The Buffy deck makes no sense at all. I don't know. It does.
What's going on there?
I don't know. I don't even. Why are we fighting? Why are you fighting on a bus? I don't even recall this scene.
Well, that's the scene is she's fighting Glory.
Oh, is this Glory?
No. Yes. Yes. Wait.
On a bus? When were they fighting on a bus?
So
I thought
they
this
were,
was season seven. I thought this was towards the end. No.
No, that's definitely five, and that's where they were trying to run away with Dawn.
That's right.
And this was the episode after Buffy goes into like a catatonic state or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my god, it's so long since I've watched that season. I usually like I always got through four and then I'm like, I'm good.
But yeah, good. Buffy was fighting somebody on the roof of the bus that they were taking. And
but this doesn't, I mean, okay. I guess in context of that, it is a change of plans and they kind of have roped them back into staying in Sunnydale.
No, I would not have gotten that at all from that card. I would have been like,
well, at that point they are leaving Sunnydale.
Yeah, but then they had to go back.
Should. Yeah.
So I guess this is a good lesson in that sometimes for these specialty decks, you really have to be polished on your knowledge of like what all of the cards are standing for. Again, maybe it's a good time to rewatch, which I am. So,
and then the other detail that I just wanted to ask about, on this card, there is a combination crescent, moon, and sun. And I was just wondering if there's any significance to that as a symbol.
That is an interesting feature. It's not on the Renaissance deck that I typically use.
Okay, but the symbol itself doesn't have like a history or anything that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay.
Something that I'm noticing with the eclipse coming up, because we're recording this right before the solar eclipse.
Cleanse your houses.
But something that has been kind of coming up as a theme for the spiritual community, at least some of the things that I've been watching and reading, because we just had a lunar eclipse also a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So the lunar eclipse really affected our inner dialogue, our inner growth, things that are happening inside ourselves that we're dealing with personally, decisions that we're making, spiritual growth that we're going through. It's everything that's affecting us on the inside. but the sun is more exterior. So it's all of the things in the outer world that affect us from the outside. So everything from the moon is what's happening on the inside of us. Everything with the sun is it stands for what's going on outside of us. So to me, I mean, I'm not familiar with a lot of symbolism with moon and sun, like too much, but both of them being on the card in this, you know, kind of conjoined together or merging into each other, it feels like it's a complete decision. Like it feels like there's a completion to the purpose of this, that that it's the right path, it's the right thing for you, it leads to wholeness is how I would interpret it.
Okay, so if the Eight of Cups is, like in your case, a card of liberation, we definitely take a sharp turn in moving to the Eight of Swords, which is a card of being trapped. So the Smith art on the Eight of Swords, we have a figure. The figure is bound with a rope. Their head is bowed with despair. And the eight swords on the card are stuck into the ground surrounding this character. The character also seems to be standing on what is either a dried up pond or maybe the shallows with the tide out. But we see kind of a mixture of land and water under their feet. Traditional interpretations that I have seen are pretty straightforward on this card. There's a feeling of being trapped, of not being able to make that decision to walk away. And we are being held back from something. I did a little spiel on escaping from being trapped in the Arcanist Corner a couple episodes ago, or last episode. I probably should have saved it for this one, but I didn't know what the eights meant when I recorded that. So let me go ahead and once again turn it over to the two of you.
Yeah, it trapped. It's such a sad card too, because it is. It's like you've been kidnapped and you're trapped in this situation that you don't know how you're getting out of. To me, it's a sad card. It's just a very sad lost. It's a very lost, hopeless, despair type of card. Very negative, but then again, we see that with the swords.
On the Waitsmith art, it doesn't quite give me the same kind of feeling as like the Three of Swords, which can kind of be a little bit similar as far as sorrow or things happening to you. It kind of has that victim feeling to it. And then in the Arthurian legend deck, the card for the Eight of Swords shows Guinevere being chained to a stake to be burned as a witch. So that is a very hopeless kind of card. But the description in the book described it as feeling bound and trapped, domination, having to rely on the judgment of others, but also approaching the end of adversity, which I guess if you're Guinevere, that means the end of this particular lifetime, unless she's saved at the last minute. But what I really like, the card that I really like, is in the Lightseer's Tarot. It shows a woman's reflection in a mirror, and the crows. In this deck, crows stand for swords, and the crows have her tied up in the string, but it's not thick string, it's very thin string, and she's blindfolded. But if you look at herself, she outside of the mirror, she is not bound. So it's all internal. It's all her own. She's free. She can go. But it's more of an, like we were just talking about moon and sun, it's an internal binding, I guess, that, you know, you're trapping yourself.
It's an internal torture.
Right. You have to let yourself go, but you have to free yourself. You have to take your own steps. It's very empowering, in my opinion, the picture of the Eight of Swords on the Lightseer's Tarot.
And so this is, you're saying this because the character depicted is only bound up in the mirror, but is not bound up in, from our
reality.
Perspective, what would be reality. Yeah.
Correct.
The Light Seer's deck is a clearer interpretation of the card. I think it's a better interpretation. I think one of the better ones I've seen of what the card truly is. I think with the Waite and Smith deck, it's more of it's so hopeless, because I mean, how is she going to get out of here? There's a bunch of swords around. There's, you know, home is so far away, assuming that's her castle. It's like the fairy tale gone wrong.
Then any significance that you know of the ground beneath her feet being either a dried up lake, pond, whatever, or the land next to an ocean with the tide out?
Well, it's that hopeless situation again. You know, is the tide going to come back and sweep her out? Is she going to get herself out in time?
I will say the other decks that I have, even the ones that are very closely based on the Smith art, do not seem to include this whole dried up lake or whatever it is.
Right. Yeah. In the Renaissance deck, it's just, I don't like this interpretation either, because it's the eight swords are in the sky, but they're not as prominently displayed as the Waite and Smith deck. And there's a woman in a beautiful dress who's looking up at them, but she doesn't seem very distressed. It's a very different feel than what the card typically is.
Okay. So that brings us then to the Eight of Pentacles. There's a lot of negative space in this card, a lot of white background. But what we do see is we see a craftsman working diligently and creating these eight pentacles. Traditional interpretation of this card says, keep practicing what you're doing. It's going to take work. It's going to take practice, and you need to keep at it. Joanne, Teresa, how do you read this card?
That's basically how I've interpreted it in the Arthurian legend deck. It shows a very, very old, wizened craftsman. Looks like a metalsmith is making a beautiful shield. But the interpretation of it is that he has earned his expertise in this field. But yeah, so I always interpreted it as that as well. It was about becoming an expert in your field. It's about hard work and honing your craft. It is also the same interpretation that I get from the Light Seer's Tarot. I think it also has a very good card, or has very good artwork for this particular card. It shows a young woman who is practicing our craft, the craft of what looks like witchcraft. There are many like bowls, potions, and smudging, and sage, and a candle in her hand, and some books on the side, and a feather pen, and a plant. And then there's the phases of the moon that are arcing over her. And then just this brilliant like rainbow of color that's emanating from her, which just shows this kind of a creativity that I'm getting from her. But to me, this card shows being focused on work, being committed to learning and becoming an expert in this particular field or in this craft. It's actually a very beautiful card.
Yeah, I want us to be careful with saying work. So work is a part of it, but I think the card is also, if you put your energy and focus into a craft or your job or your family, or if you're putting that work in, eventually it's going to build up and to that path that you want, but it's going to be work. It's the main, you know, I think the focus of the card. It's going to take time, but you will get there.
So I need your help on this one, actually.
Okay, okay.
I did want to look at the card from the Shadowscapes deck. And this is either a really beautiful card or a really creepy and disturbing card. And I'm not sure which.
I feel like Joanna is going to say yes to both. <What? laughs>
So the card depicts a spider and a spider's web, a very intricate spider's web. And the pentacles are swirls of spider silk. And so when I first looked at this card, I thought, oh, how beautiful. And what a beautiful web this spider was spinning, and that whole artistry thing. And if we are looking at this in terms of a craft, then it is a beautiful card. If, on the other hand, we're looking at this more as work, like I'm thinking of the gardening card that we had last time. If it is something where you're putting this work in order to gain some advantage later, gain some benefit later, then maybe they're not swirls at all. Maybe they're cocooned animals that the spider is about to feast on. So I don't, like I said, it's either really beautiful artistry or it's a meal being preserved.
I don't know. All I see is the spider.
I mean, she's very productive.
She's going on that right path. She is putting the work in.
She's definitely stockpiling.
Yes, he's putting the work in to survive, and she is going to survive.
The ant and not the grasshopper. She's going to make it through the winter.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So it sounds like we're siding with the creepy interpretation, not the artistry interpretation.
Nope, that's creepy.
All right.
That's how I'm seeing it. I don't know.
No, I agree. I totally agree.
So at the beginning of this episode, I deliberately skipped the part where I talk about the numerology of the card, because I think that's something that's been kind of binding me personally to the way of interpretation that this podcast does not seem to be going. Certainly, maybe in future seasons, we can discuss numerology. But I thought what might be a little more productive, instead of starting out with the numerology and then trying to force a round peg into a square hole, we might take a quick look back and discuss any themes that we see running through all of the eights. I know in looking at some of these cards, there is certainly motion. There is decision, or I should say there is either motion or a lack of motion due to deliberate restraining. Any other themes that you're seeing?
Motion is like a good, probably a good theme.
I think that motion is probably the running theme through here.
Yeah.
Either you are being pushed to take an action, there is action that you can grab onto, or
be forced to be taking action.
You need to take action or be stuck.
Okay. Well, once again, thank you very much for your help in putting these concepts together. I hope you will join me again. You will join us all for the nines. Greetings, travelers. Today we have a special treat for us. Teresa is going to be stepping in and hosting the Arcanist's Corner. So without further ado, here is Teresa.
Hello, this is Teresa. In this week's Arcanist's Corner, I'm stepping in for Jeff to share some of my thoughts this week. As far as this week's conversation about the eights and the minor arcana, I think we can agree that these are the action cards that help us to deal with the challenges we saw in the sevens, whether we are moving full speed ahead with enthusiasm towards our next chapter, or finding a way to release ourselves from situations that are no longer serving us. These cards were so straightforward that I'm not sure I have anything more to add to what Jeff, Joanne, and I covered during the regular episode. So I'd like to use this time to quickly speak a little about my own spiritual journey with the tarot, as well as to give a little advice to those who are just beginning or who are restarting their tarot journey. As I said in the first episode, I started getting familiar with and reading tarot in my late teens. And while I would say that I'm familiar with tarot, I would not consider myself an expert. And I have found that most respected tarot readers feel the same way. Many of them consider themselves students of tarot, even after decades of experience. I would agree that there is always something new to learn and new ways to look at the same cards you've been looking at for years. In my experience, the older you get, the more life experience you gain, which then helps you to recognize and convey richer messages during your readings. I'm so glad that Jeff invited me to participate in these conversations about the tarot, because to be honest, I had set aside the tarot for a few years to pursue knowledge in other modalities like Reiki, Akashic Records, channeling, and mediumship. At some point, once we finish our conversations about all of the cards of the tarot, perhaps we'll have more in-depth discussions about some of those other modalities. But as far as tarot goes, being part of these podcast conversations have really helped me understand the tarot from a new perspective, now that I'm older with more life experience, as well as a deeper, more appreciative understanding after immersing myself in spiritual practices that I didn't have when I first started my tarot journey. All of this has helped me to see the tarot in a new, more vivid perspective. Much like the Eight of Pentacles card, to me, tarot is a practice like yoga or any other skill set that gets better with regular use and practice. Look at that. I was able to bring us right back to one of the eights. Before you can run, you must walk. Before you walk, you must crawl. And so on, as we know the saying goes. So let's get you started with a few exercises that can help you familiarize yourself with tarot beyond waiting for our next episode to drop. You can really start getting to know your cards by practicing a one-card pull every day as part of your morning routine, maybe even as part of your morning meditation. You do meditate, right? Make sure your cards are well shuffled and think of a question you might have about your day. Or maybe just ask how best to navigate the day ahead. Pull a card and trust that whatever card you pick is what you need to hear and contemplate. Keep a small notebook where you can journal the feelings you get when you look at your one card. Recently, I listened to a podcast where the hosts interviewed someone who had been reading and teaching the tarot for 40 years. She briefly described her beginner classes that lasted about 9 months, and that in that course, she discouraged looking at any books and encouraged journaling thoughts and feelings just from viewing the individual card that was pulled. After writing down your general feelings upon first viewing the card, perhaps start carefully noticing the artwork. Pay close attention to the colors being used and how they make you feel. What symbols do you notice, and what do they mean to you? If there are people or characters on the card, what emotions do they convey? Curiosity, sadness, joy, something else? What is it, and what does that mean to you? How does that make you feel about the day to come? What challenges do you expect? And how do you think you can navigate them based on what this card is telling you? At the end of the day, Look at that card and your notes from the morning again. Review your day and see how you may have followed this path, and if you were able to use some of the guidance from this morning's card pull to move through it. And maybe just for fun, make a special place in your home where you can always do this. Make it fun and magical with beautiful artwork and decor. I really love this method to get to know the tarot better, and it can be used anytime you are getting to know a new deck. Another tip I would suggest is finding the people around you who share this interest and enjoy deep discussions about tarot. Like I said before, even after 20 plus years of reading tarot, having these new conversations with Jeff and Joanne have further deepened my understanding of the cards. Other people's perspective on the cards helps me to see new aspects that I may not have noticed before, and that can help you become a better reader. Tarot readers and spiritual practitioners are as varied as any other people. The tips I just gave allow for a lot more open creativity than some other readers might be comfortable suggesting. I understand that for some people, they are more comfortable having a more structured approach to tarot, and there are any number of classes and teachers that you can find that suits your personality and learning style. You should always search for the teacher, the reader, the class structure that works best and feels right for you. But above all, make sure that you're acting with kindness and with good intention, especially when you're giving or reading to someone who's looking for guidance.
Leyline Junction is hosted and produced by me, Jeff Sternstein. My guests today were Joanne Beth and Teresa Brigado. In her Arcanist Corner, Teresa spoke about a podcast that talked about journaling. That podcast she was referring to was Spirit Speakers. I'm afraid we do not have a specific episode for you, but go give them a listen. Tell them Teresa from Leyline Junction sent you. On the podcast today, as always, we discussed the Rider Tarot deck composed by Arthur Waite with art by Pamela Smith. I myself discussed the Shadowscapes deck by Stephanie Puy-Moon-Law. Teresa discussed the Legend, the Arthurian Tarot by Anna Marie Ferguson, and the Lightseer's Tarot by Chris Ann, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer Tarot by Casey Gilley and Carl James Mountford. Joanne spoke of the Tarot of the Renaissance by Pietro Aligo. If you want to support the show, the best thing that you can do is rate us and review us wherever you downloaded this podcast. You can also find us on Instagram at Leyline Junction, no spaces, no underscores. As I mentioned, it may have been a while since we've been on, but I hope we are back and we are happy to be continuing this journey with you. So until our paths next cross, I do wish you well on your journey. And as I was editing the last episode, I'm telling myself I've really got to keep them more focused, and we can't do this back and forth thing. I need this editing to go quicker. Ah, that's out the window already.
Keep us on task. Are you kidding?
I mean,
all right.
Hurting cats.
You're basically hurting cats.